Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Introduction to the WebSphere Commerce Database for DB2 Administrators. Today's presenter is Andres Foldman. Andres is a software engineer at the IBM Toronto Lab, Canada. He is a senior member of the WebSphere Commerce Support Team and a subject matter expert on performance and stability of WebSphere Commerce sites. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Andres.
Hello. Thank you, Joseph. Today, this presentation is about the WebSphere Commerce database and different WebSphere Commerce topics, but from a DBA perspective. And if we can move to the agenda on slide number 2, please. Some of the topics we're going to cover are DB2 versions supported by WebSphere Commerce, an introduction to the WebSphere Commerce scheme and tables, how to create a commerce database and how to configure it, connection management, lock-in. We're going to have a view to the staging server and workspaces, and also we're going to cover database maintenance and performance. We have a lot of topics to cover, so I may have to go a little bit quick on some slides. I hope we get to cover everything. And if we can move to slide number 3, please. Here you can see the DB2 versions that are supported by WebSphere Commerce. For example, with version 7, we're going to support 9.5.4 and also 9.7.1, but you require WebSphere Commerce 6.1. We also have some limited support for PureScale, that is DB2 9.8. If you're on Commerce version 6, we support DB2 8.2 6.3. We also support DB2 9.1 6.3 with Commerce 6.6 and 9.5 6.1 also with Commerce 6.6. And with WebSphere Commerce 5.6.1, we support 8.2.1. Something that I want to add is that you may see that DB2 8.2 is not supported by DB2, but because Commerce is supported and Commerce supports DB2 8.2, if you're a Commerce customer, you're going to have support for DB2 8.2. If we can move to slide number 4, please. All DB2 fix packs that are higher than the minimum required are supported. For example, if you have 8.2.3 and if you want to apply 8.2.5, it will be supported. Please note that only the last number is supported. Like if we support 9.5, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to support 9.7, although we do it version 6. But every time there's a fix pack coming out from DB2, you are supported, and we recommend that you apply it. If you have a hard copy of the presentation, I provided links there that are going to list, are going to have a more complete description of all the levels that are supported by Commerce. When you're working on a remote configuration, we need the DB2 client installed. We require the admin client or the configuration for the admin version. The client instance is going to have to match Java runtime for the bits. For example, if you're running Commerce in 32 bits, you're going to have to create a Commerce 32-bit client instance. We do have 64-bit support now, but it's starting on Commerce 7 6.1. Something to notice, too, is that when you're using Commerce 5.6.1 or Commerce 6, we use the Type 2 legacy driver. And if you remember, Type 2 means we're going to rely on the local instance, on the local client installation to connect to DB2. With Commerce 7, it's going to use a Type 4 driver. And Type 4 means it's a pure Java driver, basically a jar, and we don't really have a strong dependency on the way that the client is configured, like all the CLI configurations. Although we still have a few things in Commerce that are going to use Type 2. I think if you're using mass load or catalog import, we're going to use Type 2. So we still require that you install the client and configure it even with Commerce 7. And if we can move to the next slide, number 5, please. So we're going to cover a schema in the next few slides. The whole purpose of these slides is for you to become aware that we have a lot of documentation regarding the schema in the Commerce Information Center. That is the main help page you can access in the web. So when you're curious about what a table is used for, you can always go to the info center and list the table and all the relationships. If we can move to slide number 6, please. The Wazir Commerce schema, we all know that Wazir Commerce is used for running e-commerce sites. Therefore, the schema is going to contain all the data that is relevant to the running of an e-commerce site. You can find customer information, catalog, pricing, orders, etc. So if you need information, as I said, about the schema, you can go to the Wazir Commerce Info Center. There's in the slide, you can find an example. So we're going to list all the, for a particular table, we're going to list all the columns, the column types, the description, indexes, foreign keys. So you can find very useful information in the Info Center. If we can go to slide number 7, please. This is another example. This screenshot was also taken from the Info Center. And we is showing how the member data model works. Member basically can be a user on an organization. You're going to see that when the number of guests and registered users increases, these tables are going to become larger too. Tables such as member, org entity, user, user reg, member rel, member role. You can learn about more about these tables by going to the Wazir Commerce Info Center. Something to notice is that many assets, for example, orders, are going to be owned by a member. A member is a user. So you're going to find that when dealing with members, you're going to have a really large number of foreign keys pointing to the member table. If we can move to the next slide, please. Another data model to mention is, for example, the catalog data model. The key table is called card entry, which represents a product. Card desk is a description for a product. Card group, which is a category, or card group desk, which is the description for a category. And also these diagrams were taken from the Info Center. And another data model is the order management data model. So you're going to find tables such as order, order item, offer, offer price. These tables are also going to grow quickly as you have a live site and you keep collecting orders. If we can move to the next slide, please. A very important concept is that most likely you're going to have to make changes to the commerce database. And there are changes that are supported, but changes that we are restricting to prevent issues with the code or the migration. Again, if you have a hard copy and you follow that link, we have it's pointing to an information center document that lists and provides a lot of details on what is supported and what is not. An example of a supported change would be to change a table space, add an index to a table, create new tables. Something that wouldn't be supported by commerce is renaming a column on one of our out-of-the-box tables, because obviously that's going to break our code. Or maybe changing a primary key because that is also going to impact the code. If we can move to the next slide, please. And this is just an introduction because we're going to be covering database creation in the next few slides. So if you want to move to the next one, slide number 11. Wazir Commerce Instant Creation is the process to create a Wazir Commerce server and associate the server to a database. And during the creation of the Wazir Commerce instance, the following options are supported. So you're going to be using something called the Configuration Manager. And when you're creating a commerce instance, you're going to be offered the option to create a new local or remote database. And you can use an existing or a new database. And if you're using an existing database, you can create a new schema on the database or use an existing schema. But you should remember that using an existing schema means that you're going to have a schema with tables, but there's going to be no referential constraints or data. This option is provided only if you want to change maybe the table spaces and you have a database ready and you can use commerce to go and create the referential constraints and populate some data on the table. Now, many times you find that you already have a commerce database, and you want to use it for a different server that you're creating, and you want to point this new server to the new database or to existing database. That can be done, but it's going to require that you change the instance creation script and you comment out the database creation part. So by commenting out the database creation part, you can get commerce to point to an existing pre-populated database. If we can move to the next slide, please. These are some examples of files that are going to be used during instance creation. For example, in those paths, you're going to find wcs.schema.sql, wcs.key.sql, and wcs.index.sql. If you open those files, you're going to see what commerce is going to execute when it's creating a database. And for example, if you want to change the table space for a particular table, you can go and edit that file, and instead of creating the table on the default table space, you can specify your own. Or the same for indexes. If you want to create an index on a different table space, you could go and edit that file and change that. And we know several customers that have done that for performance reasons. You should keep in mind that when you're applying, for example, a feature pack, there are other files that are going to be used to create tables as well. So you may need to go and update those files. So when you're applying a feature pack, the new tables that come with the feature pack are also created under the table space you want. Otherwise, they're going to be created under the default table space. If we can move to slide number 13, please. This slide is going to continue showing what the defaults are when you're creating a Web Commerce database. A file that is executed is called createDB.db2.sh or .bat, and you can find it in the bin directory. And we recommend that you review it, and you're going to see the default options that are used just when creating the database. And some examples are that we're going to have different buffer pools, for example, 8K, 16K, and 32K, and corresponding new table spaces. You should notice that the default sizes for the buffer pools are relatively small, so you may want to increase them. Also, I know with DB2.9, you're going to have the more automatic memory management, but you may want to increase the initial sizes too, and this could be done after you create the database. If we can move to slide number 14, please. Most of the Web Commerce you're going to find it is in Java code. But we do have a few stored procedures that are created out of the box. And these stored procedures are only used for HTTP, available to promise, which is one of the inventory models that Commerce supports. So if you're using HTTP, you're going to find that these stored procedures are used, and they get called quite frequently. So you need to remember to rebind the stored procedures, so as the statistics are changing and are being updated in your database, you need to rebind the stored procedures so they can take advantage of the latest stacks. And I guess we can move to slide number 15. In this section, we're going to talk about connection management and transaction management because we have seen several questions around how commerce manages a connection or how commerce manages a transaction. So if we move to slide number 16, we can start with the topic. Each server, and remember you can have, with Web Commerce can work in a cluster environment, so you may have multiple servers. Each server will use connection pooling. When a request is received, a connection is taken from the pool. When the request is complete, the connection will be returned to the pool and made available to the next request. As you're using connection pooling, you're going to see a large number of established connections, but most of them are going to be in unit of work waiting, meaning the connections are going to be idle, but there's going to be a small percentage that are actually going to be executing. And if you want to know how many connections are going to be active into the database, you can talk to the Web admins, and there are multiple configuration options that allow you to control how big a pool can get and when to discard connections. For example, you could say, if a connection is inactive for half an hour, I want to destroy it. Or you could say, I want to ensure that a connection is never held for more than 2 hours, and I want to force the client to get a new connection. Those are all options that you can do in the commerce server. Something that you should be aware of is that the maximum number of connections per server times the number of servers will determine the maximum number of connections to the database. And you need to find out what that number is going to be. We have seen cases when this is slower than in the database, and we're going to cover that next, but you're going to see the number of connections increase, and then you're going to find that maybe the database cannot handle so many connections because suddenly you have 10 times as many connections, and you run into performance issues just because you have too many connections open to the database. So it is important that you find out the maximum number of connections that can be opened from each server and the number of servers you have. If we can move to the next slide, please. So this is slide number 17. A question that we typically get is, what makes the number of connections increase? Because people are having maybe a problem in their site, and they're saying the problem is with the database and the connections are increasing. So let me give you an example. The application server is going to use also a pool for web container threads. So as the connections are executed quickly, you're going to see that although you may have 50 threads in the pool, never you're going to find that more than five are executing at any time. So as connections are executing, they are completing, and they are reusing the connections. Now, let's say that for any reason a connection slows down and the connection is not returned to the pool. So when a new connection comes in, it's going to require a new connection from the database, and it's going to acquire another connection from the database. So you're going to see that a server slowdown is really going to increase the number of connections you see to the database, and this can happen really until the maximum allowed that you're defining in the connection pool settings in the app server. Also, another thing to mention is that during warm-up, because the server is not going to have a cache, you're going to see many more connections as well, because as the cache is primed, the common server won't have to go to the database as often. We can move to slide 18, please. Transaction management. Every time the Webshare Commerce Server receives a new request, a new database transaction will be associated to it. So let's say you're executing add to cart in the browser. When the request is received by Commerce, we start a new database transaction, and until that request finishes, we don't return that transaction and that connection to the pool. So when the transaction finishes, we commit or roll back the connection and return it to the pool. So if a request is slow for any reason, you're going to find that, for example, database locks will be held longer. So when you're seeing why the application server is holding locks for so long, well, it could be that, for example, the database went and acquired a lock on the database, the app server went and acquired a lock on the database, and then went to wait on an MQ message, and while waiting on MQ, you're going to be holding the lock because the lock is only going to be released when the Webshare request finishes. So that's an important thing to notice. And if we can move to slide number 18, please. Now we're going to start with the lock-in section, and I guess we just can go ahead and move on to slide number 20 to start. Isolation levels. In Webshare Commerce 5.6.1, we use read stability, RS, and all the write locks are kept until the end of the transaction, and shared locks for selected rows are going to be kept until the end of the transaction as well. So when we are talking, remember before we were saying that Webshare Commerce is going to hold the lock, is going to maintain an open transaction until the request completes, it's worse in 5.6.1 because we are also going to be holding shared locks until the web request finishes. In Webshare Commerce version 6 and 7, we are now using cursor stability, which is a lower isolation level, and in 6 and 7, only write locks are going to be kept until the end of the transaction. So when you're getting a snapshot for version 6, it's amazing how many less locks you're going to see. But in order to implement CS, in Webshare Commerce 6 and 7, we have to implement something called optimistic locking. Another thing to mention is that the isolation level cannot be changed. So if we can move to the slide number 21, please. Now, I mentioned a minute ago that in order to lower the isolation level, in version 6 and 7, we have to implement something called optimistic locking. And now we're going to give you an example of what optimistic locking means. In order to implement optimistic locking, we have to add a column on each table called upcounter. So whenever you're selecting a row, we're going to be selecting the upcounter value as well. Now, if that row needs to be updated, we're going to use the original upcounter in the word clause. For example, you can see in the slide that we're updating a table called my table, and we are setting the upcounter to 101, where the upcounter is 100. Now, what happens is every time a row is updated, the upcounter is increased, and somebody went and updated the column or updated the row since I read from the table, the up count is not going to be 100 anymore. So that update is going to return 0 rows updated. Again, I select the up count is 100. After 1 minute, I want to go and do an update saying update when up count is 100. But in the meantime, somebody went and updated the same row and increase the up counter to 101. So in that case, my update is going to fail. And when it fails, you're going to see a message called an exception in the logs called optimistic update failure exception. Now, the good news is that Commerce is going to implement a retry logic. So when it gets an optimistic update failure exception, it may retry the transaction. So it wouldn't really fail for the end user. It's just going to try to execute the same one more time to see if it works the second time. Now we can move to slide number 22nd, please. Now, I mentioned that for this to work, every time you update a row, you need to remember to increase the up counter. So we do that in the Commerce EJB code, but in order to ensure that always, every time a row is updated, the up counter is increased, we are also defining triggers on every single table that uses optimistic locking. So if you see that trigger, for example, the trigger is going to be fired only if the up counter is null or if the up counter is the same as before. So even if your code is not increasing the up counter on an update, the trigger is going to take care of that and it's going to increase the up counter. Slide 23, please. Now we're going to start talking about locking, and I guess there's a lot to say about locking. And one of the most important things, and when we're working in support, one of the first things that we're trying to find out is the nature of the connections involved. For example, are we dealing with locking from two different web or storefront requests that are locking each other? Or are we running a batch or a backend process that is locking the store and storefront requests? I'm going to provide just a few tips here on how to distinguish between a storefront request and backend request. Something very important is that you're familiar with the schema. I mentioned that before, and you need to understand what the tables are for. So if you see the orders table, you know what a record in the orders table means. If you see a row in the member table, you understand what the member table means. So look at the query first. All of the storefront queries are typically really fast and for one particular ID. So if they're operating on the orders table, they're only going to operate on the orders table by primary key, orders ID equals to something. Now, if the query is going after a group of IDs, for example, all orders with status X, then that's giving you a clue that the query is coming from a backend job and it's not really a storefront request. And a trick that we typically use is that some customers configure particular JVMs only to do batch. So if you look in the snapshot, you're going to see the host name and the port number where the request is coming from. So by using that information, you can locate the JVM. For example, I was saying if a customer has a JVM that only does scheduler jobs, and you see the connection coming from there, you immediately know that it's not a storefront request. It is a request coming from a scheduler or a backend. Another tip is that when the query time out or you see deadlock, WebSphere Commerce is also going to have errors, and it's going to print the stack trace. the calling method that timed out. So that can be very helpful for problem determination as well. Day, time of day is also a clue. So let's say it's failing every day at 3 a.m., I mean, that's pretty much strong evidence that you may be dealing with a back-end job that is hanging and not really storefront requests. If we can move to slide number 24, please. Now, I'm going to give a few examples of locking between store requests. And a very common scenario is the multi-click scenario. So remember I mentioned that when that a new transaction is created for each web request. So it is possible that a single user will have more than one transaction at a time. So imagine you're clicking on order process. And when you click on order process, the customer goes and clicks twice. So you're going to end up with two transactions for order process for the same user running at the same time. So it is not uncommon that these two requests, as they're going after the same data, they're either going to lock timeout or you're going to get a deadlock or you're going to see maybe an optimistic locking exception. There are multiple techniques to prevent multi-click. For example, Wazir Commerce has something called double-click handler, but also in the store, in the JavaScript, in the storefront, there are techniques where you disable the button or disable all the buttons on the screen. So when the customer clicks on one, order process, for example, they are not allowed to click again until the request completes. So the purpose of this slide is to show you that if you've seen a lot of locking, for example, on the orders table, the first thing to see is, are we allowing users to click multiple times on the same button or similar buttons? Another tip is that if you have, we use something called session affinity, and that means all the requests from the same user are going to go to the same server. So typically when it's a double click and you get a lot of deadlocks, you're going to see that everybody's coming from the same server. That's a clue that you may be dealing with a multi-click scenario. And we are ready to move to slide number 25, please. Different users locking each other. We shouldn't allow really different users working on their own orders to lock each other. So if we find that that's the case, maybe there's something wrong in the configuration or in the database that we need to tune. Look at the tables involved and the nature of the queries. I mean, is it normal for them to lock? For example, you have one transaction that is updating inventory for a product, and you have another transaction waiting to query inventory for the same product. In that case, we know that it has to do with the design of the application and with the relational databases, so not two people can update inventory on the same product at the same time. On the other hand, you find two people updating their own orders, and they are locking each other, then that's definitely a problem. I mean, two different users shouldn't be locking each other when they are working on their own orders, and that would require more investigation. Slide number 26, please. Now we're going to talk about locking, but between a back-end or a batch job and store requests. So back-end and batch updates can be a source of contention because they operate on multiple rows at a time, and typically on rows that are being used by the storefront. Some examples are staging propagation, data loads, a data cleanup, a cron schedule job. I mean, a basic example is you have people going after a particular category or trying to buy a product at the same time the product is being updated using staging propagation. So now I'm saying in the slide that the situation may be difficult to resolve because the database is working as designed. And it is true. I mean, if you have somebody updating a product and somebody trying to read the product at the same time, that's going to be locking. But there are techniques we can use to try to minimize this locking. For example, a batch process should always run during periods of low activity, if possible, obviously. You can do a smaller units of work. So remember, if you need to update 10,000 products, if you wait until the end to commit, nobody can access any of those 10,000 products while the process is running. But if you're committing every 100 products, the process may take a little bit longer, but overall, you're going to help concurrency, and you're going to free up all those resources as you go. Something that we have seen help is not a good solution, but to increase the timeout. So you may have a timeout for web requests of 20 seconds, but you can say, okay, you're a back-end job or a bad job, you're allowed to wait longer until the resources free up. So you may have an application-specific timeout that's going to be a few minutes. And something that typically helps is that a lot of caching in the app server. I mean, if you're caching the product page and you're updating the product page in the database, if customers are requesting the page and getting a cached hit, then they are not really going to be going to the database again, and there's not going to be contention. That's a way to hide all the maybe some locking that you could see. And we can move to slide number 27, please. DB2 Workload WC. DB2 Workload WC is available since DB2 9.5.6.4. Maybe you saw before DB2 Workload was available for SAP or other products, but Commerce was included only in 6.4. When you're using WSL Commerce 7, it's going to be set by default. And if you expand that variable, because DB2 Workload is just like a group of settings that have a common name, you're going to see that DB2 Workload WC is going to define a lot of variables that help a lot during to deal with locking situations. I can mention on this list, Evalan Commit is very helpful, skip inserted, skip deleted, Julie. Those are all very helpful that are set automatically in WSL Commerce 7, but also, if you're not on Commerce 7 or you're not on 9.5.4, you can still set the variables one by one. Slide number 28, please. This is slide 28. We made an improvement in the scheme in Commerce 7. To reduce locking that can occur during delete operations, DB2 requires that all the foreign keys are supported by indexes. And if you have a hard copy, there's a link there that provides more information on this. In WSL Commerce version 7, we have increased the scheme and we have included a lot more indexes to support the foreign keys. So when you delete, there's not going to be as much locking as there used to be in version 6. At the same time, with DB2 9.5.6.4, there's a new APIR in DB2 that because we found that even if you create the right index, even if you have an index to support the foreign key, there was no way to ensure that DB2 will use it. So one of the improvements that DB2 made was to ensure that when you have an index to support a foreign key, it will be used and locking will be minimized. And there are other improvements in the APIR, such as using the number of columns that it can use and overall improvements to locking during cascade deletes. So if you are, for example, doing a lot of DB clean, especially on the member table, this is something that typically can help a lot. Slide number 29, please. Okay, finally we got to the staging server part, so we can move to slide number 30 and start talking about the staging server. WSL Commerce has something called a staging server. So it's a server where business users can go and do configuration changes, maybe catalog, pricing, they can try promotions, web activities, without having to work directly on the production server. And the way that the staging server works is that every time a change is made on the staging server, we're going to use a trigger, capture the change on a table called the stack log, and so everything that you do in the staging database will be recorded. Now, at some point, you can run an utility called staging prop, and what the staging prop utility does is that you're going to read the stack log table, find all the unprocessed jobs, and then go and execute either insert, update, or delete operations from the production database. You can add your own tables to staging. It's documented in the info center how you can do it, and in this slide I'm mentioning some tables that staging is going to use to find the tables that need to be propagated. You not only need to add the table name, if you're adding your own custom table, you're going to have to add triggers to your own custom table, so the changes to this table are recorded into the stack log table. At the same time, we have an utility called staging copy, and staging copy is used when you're setting up a staging server, and you want to sync up the staging server with the production database. So you run a staging copy, and it will connect to the production database and take information from the production and copy it to the staging server. Now, we don't recommend you do it a lot. It's typically just for special circumstances. Once the two servers are in sync, all the flow is staging server to production server. Something else to mention is that the staging server will not contain user data, order data, anything that is user-related. It's just for catalog, promotions, those kind of assets. So even when you're doing a staging copy, it will not copy any user data from the production server to the staging database. And we can move to the next slide, please. I said that everything that we do in staging is going to be captured by a trigger, so I'm providing an example of how a trigger works, basically saying after you do an insert on the quantity unit table, in this example, we're going to insert into a stack log and say the ID that you inserted, the operation is I, and you're going to see the insert on the stack log table. Something to mention is that in version 7, we're using a sequence as the ID for the stack log table, and before version 7, we used to use the keys table. But the sequence is a lot better for locking. Again, if you have a hard copy, you're going to find that there's a link on how to create and add your own tables to the staging server. And we can move to the next slide, number 32. I think the most important message here is that if you think that you're doing what the staging server is, and it's just a copy of the production database, and it's going to capture all the changes with triggers and then push them to production. So I can say that the staging server is quite delicate, and you need to really plan on how the updates are going to be done. So let's say you do an update directly on production and you have a staging server. When you want to propagate, you may run into problems. You're going to see duplicate key exceptions. You're going to see missing foreign keys. You're going to see updates on data that doesn't exist. And all these are going to make a staging prop fail. And then fixing staging prop is a manual process. So let's say you have a product in staging, you do an update, at the same time you went to production and you did a delete of the product. When you do a staging prop, staging is going to say update this product, but the product doesn't exist. So you're going to get an error and staging is going to fail. And the only way to fix that is by manually working on the stack log table or maybe doing a staging copy, but it's not that straightforward to fix, and it's typically going to require the involvement of an administrator to do it. So, again, I think the main message here is that you need to really plan carefully how the databases are going to be updated. Typically, all changes need to go to staging first, and then you push the change to production. However, in some cases, some changes can go to production without going to staging, such as a price feed update. Maybe you have a huge change and you don't want to push to staging to have to push to production. But overall, you need to be very careful on how the changes are made. And we can move to slide number 31st, please. Workspace is a really interesting topic from a database administrator point of view. Basically, in staging, each user is going to be allowed to work on their own set of data. So let's say I want to see how a promotion works. I'm going to create a promotion, and I'm going to change different options. Then when I'm done, I'm going to get an approval, and I'm going to move the promotion or my configuration to the base schema, and from the base schema, it can be propagated. Now, the way that this is implemented is quite interesting. It's done with multiple schemas. So everybody's going to be using their own schema. So when you're using workspaces, you're going to find multiple schemas are created in the database on top of the base schema. And each workspace will be associated to one read and write schema. There are some special steps required to include your own custom tables. And again, if you have a hard copy, you can follow those links to get more information. And we can move to slide number 34, please. This is an example of how the schemas are defined. We have a write schema. So for each workspace, we're going to have a read and a write schema. A write scheme is just a table, and the schema name is typically WCW and a number such as 101. So let's say you create a promotion, the promotion is actually going to be inserted into the write schema. At the same time, we have a read schema. Read schemas do not contain tables, they contain views. So when you're going to the store preview functionality, for example, you find that you need to be able to see the store how it works. You need to be able just to see the store. So the way that it works is that instead of tables, we have views, and the view is going to say, give me all the content from the workspace and all the content from the base schema if that ID is not part of the main of the workspace. And I'm including an example there about the list price, and maybe you can take some time after the presentation and see how it is implemented, but you can see that it's selecting from the base schema and also selecting all the rows except when the row is also part of the workspace. So we can move to slide number 35, please. Now, I'm not going to cover database maintenance in detail because we have another WSTE from last year that talks just about database maintenance. If we can move to slide number 36. I'm just going to provide the main thought, is that you need to do a lot of maintenance on the commerce database, transplant, reorg, and rebind. And you need to, most customers are going to do it weekly, but it can be done more often depending on your batch operations. You can move to slide number 37, please. The commerce database is going to grow fast. I mean, it's not only the orders and users. There are also many configuration tables and session data that is kept in the database that can grow quite fast. So when you're planning a new Wazir commerce site, it's important that you have a strategy in place and you know in advance how you're going to be deleting from those tables, and you're going to ensure that the database is properly maintained. Some examples are, do I keep all pending orders? A pending order is somebody just adding an item to the cart and without checking out. What about all the guest users that come to the site? For how long do I need to keep them? So there are many questions that need to be made to ensure that the commerce database doesn't grow out of hand. And if you follow the link of the webcast, there's this other presentation that I mentioned before that is called Database Maintenance in a Wazir Commerce Database. That's going to provide you a lot of details around DB cleaning and just maintenance in general. So we can move to slide number 38, please. I'm going to cover very quickly the performance topic, so we can move to slide number 39. The main thoughts are commerce is typically OLTP. So you have thousands of shoppers on your site executing queries. The queries need to be fast. And most queries are going to be by primary key or are going to return a very small result set. By fast, I mean you have anything that takes a lot more than a few milliseconds, and you may see a problem when you're actually live and you have many people executing the same query at the same time. Slide number 40, please. This is a good topic. We have received complaints that when you're doing case insensitive search, is typically slow. And that's because when you're applying a function such as an upper on an alphanumeric field, DB2 may not use an index. So you say, where last name, the upper of last name equals to your last name, instead of using an index by last name, DB2 may do a table scan. So the way to fix that is that we have created a bunch of new calculated columns out of the box. The calculated columns are also called generated columns. And basically, you create a new column that is going to contain the upper of another column on the same table. And then you create an index on that column. When DBT is executing the query and it sees an upper of a column, and it sees that you already have a column that is indexed, that is also an upper of the column, it's going to use an index and it's not going to have to calculate the upper on every single row on the table. So this can improve performance a lot. So the performance that you can expect with this technique is that a query is going to behave the same if you're doing case-sensitive or case-insensitive search. You may find that if you have your own queries or there are queries that are not supported by a calculated column, you're allowed to create your own. So you implement your own search, and you need a calculated column to improve case-sensitive performance, then you can go and create another calculated column to the schema. And slide number 41, please. Application query caching. This is a tip that you can help the commerce administrator find opportunities for caching. And it is important, as I mentioned before, to be very familiar with the schema so you understand what good candidates can be. The way that I typically do it is I get a snapshot, but dynamic SQL, and I grab the top maybe 20 queries. And take a look at the queries. For example, you see 100,000 queries to the store table, but when you query the store table, you find that never changes, and it only contains two stores. So if you only have two stores on table that never changes, why do you need 100,000 queries on that table in a 10-minute period? Maybe if you see a lot of queries on the orders table, it's a different thing because the orders table is very large and it changes all the time. But there are some static configuration tables that are typically and are cached by the application server. So if you find a lot of these examples, you can talk to the commerce admin to find out why you're seeing so many queries on the DB and they're not cached. Slide number 42, please. And we are done with the presentation. And I did talk a lot today. I just include some references on some useful material that you can access, and it provides more information around commerce and databases. Joseph, I guess you want to continue now?
Thank you, Andres, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Sherry, we would like to open the line for questions.
At this time, I have no questions in queue.
Thank you, Sherry. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.